Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan, and welcome to Let's Talk, the show that brings you the most important conversations of the day. Today we're going to be talking about prisons, but from a particular and artistic point of view. Gulag Archipelago Zigzag opens at the Redza Piyadasa Gallery at University of Malaya's Cultural Centre. It opened a couple of days ago, and it's going on till the 30th of May. The artist behind this project is Ray Langenbach, who's joined me. And together with him, I have Hishamuddin Rice, who plays a particular role in this exhibition, as well as UM academic Simon Soon, who's a lecturer in art history at the Cultural Centre. Thank you so much, guys, for joining me. Let's start with you, Ray, since it's your show. You actually, of course, make reference to that very famous trilogy by Alexander Solzhenitsyn, the Russian writer. The Gulag Archipelago. Why the Gulag Archipelago?
Well, because the Gulag Archipelago was an analysis from the inside, in his own experience, of the Stalinist distributed system of prisons throughout the Soviet Union of that time. And that was perhaps the most ramified and most complex and largest prison system in the world of its time. But now the largest prison system and most ramified prison system in the world is that of the United States. So it seemed appropriate to, and a bit of a goad at toward the United States, my country of origin, that to call it the Gulag Archipelago is to make reference to that Stalinist past, but you know what in some ways could be seen as an autocratic and Stalinist present in the United States.
Yeah, I also, you know, just people who might not know, you were on my show a couple of months ago speaking about a performance festival that you did in Gaza. And I know in conversations that we've had that you often refer to Gaza as a kind of open-air prison.
Right.
And one of the largest in the world.
Yes, well, perhaps the largest in the world. So in the exhibition, I'm bringing both in the performance and the exhibition. So Palestine itself, the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, are the largest open air prison in the world, and that is through continuous support of the United States and as a kind of proxy imperialist project, I would say, and so the largest prison system in the world, the largest open air prison in the world.
Right. So you're making all these really interesting links. I want to know why Hishamuddin Rais is in this show with us. I know he appears in a video. Could you sort of tell us why you invited him to be in the show?
Yeah. Hisham and Seelan Pillay from Singapore, because their prison experiences and what I was hoping to bring out is the experience, the material experience of being in prison. So because people think of prison as a almost a kind of abstraction over there, if they have not themselves been in prison, and but it's a very material day-to-day experience, which is quite grueling and alters people's consciousness and their physical being. So I wanted some of that aspect to actually be in the exhibition as well. So there are two videos, two interviews, one with Hisham and the other with Seelan.
Okay, because people know Hisham, know you from your political activism. I know you have a new book out, and I'm gonna, you know, promote it here. Just come out, but we're not gonna get into the book. You haven't, as much as I know, really written about your prison experiences, and you've had all kinds of experiences under the ISA, the most extreme, of course. But you've been in a prison for criminal activity and activism too. Tell us about it.
I have been to total, I think, 16 prisons all over the world. I've been in Australian prisons, I've been in India prison, I've been in Moscow prison. I've been there. So, I mean, it's nothing new. But the first time it was in September 1974, the first time, as a freshie entering prison, yes, it feels. But after that, it was just another experience, another night spending in the cell. Right. So that's what.
Okay, and that first experience was down in Johor Bahru, in support of squatters.
Squatters, yeah. Tasik Utara, 1974, yes. And when Ray was asking me about the prison, so yes, I'm so happy because there's other aspect that how did one spend one's time? And yes, that's what I did, you know. And because it's 24 hours, I mean, time is, yes, time is relative. You know, in the prison, it is very, very long. From breakfast to lunch, from lunch to tea, from tea, it's all very long. So how does one spend, particularly when I was 2 months in solitary confinement? And this is where my inner artistic talent come to being.
Okay, well, we're going to talk about that a little later on. I wanted to understand your perspective, Simon, as an art historian. This interest in the prison experience. Where do you locate it in terms of art history?
Right, it's funny, right? What does an art historian have to sort of say about this subject? But incidentally, what happened last year was that we actually sort of managed to devise a sort of like 7 week long project within a juvenile detention facility out in Puncak Alam.
You're talking about the cultural center?
The cultural center and Malaysia Design Archive, where we actually sort of like devised a series of sort of like drawing exercises to, I guess, encourage sort of like the prisoners and the inmates to actually think about decision making in a much more sort of like holistic manner, and as a way to sort of like open up conversations between those who sort of like went in as facilitators of this project and those who are sort of like in there and trying to sort of find a different kind of language to express themselves.
So this was kind of a therapeutic project, was it?
It was framed as a therapeutic project, but very sort of very early on in the project, we decided that that was not the most sort of like accurate sort of like framing, right? We were not there to sort of like ameliorate them, or it wasn't a restorative justice kind of like thing that we were sort of like doing. What we were interested in is also like perhaps engage them on a sort of like, you know, one-to-one level, have a conversation and sort of like try to understand what the sort of like conditions of being incarcerated.
This is juvenile.
And okay, what you've said just now was so pertinent, because one of the first things, and this happens in a level of an aesthetic, right, that you talked about, is that they introduced to me this very term that they use called maso ae. And they use that constantly.
Maso
ae.
Which means?
Which means that you're sort of like, you know, you're suffocated by so much of time. Are being surrounded with so much overabundance of excess of time, right? Yeah. That you don't know what to do with it. You feel like you're drowning.
It's just the opposite of masuk angin, you know? Yeah, okay. This is masuk angin.
Ray, okay, we'll come back to that. But very quickly, Ray, were you drawing on any American sources when you thought of this project? I mean, at least from an aesthetic point of view, have American artists, you know, whatever medium they're working in, looked at the prison?
Yeah, well, I used to direct an NGO in Massachusetts, in Boston, which was, it was called the Prison Art Project, and I coordinated and directed it at different stages, and so for 6 years, it was my first sort of main job after art school, was to hire other artists to go into the Massachusetts prison system and to work with the inmates. And it was very, very similar in some ways, you know, that it was, but we were trying to avoid any notion of that this was, you know, therapeutic. Although it is, of course, therapeutic, and it's one of the ways that inmates survive, and particularly in that period, that hour of the wolf, of the period during the night when suicides take place, and having that little real estate of a canvas that you have control over is in a situation where you have no control over your life is very significant to them. So that's the main impetus, I would say, for my interest in prisons. Now it's now, that was in the 1970s. Now it's quite a bit later.
Right, because then Alexander Solzhenitsyn wrote his famous The Gulag Archipelago in the 50s and into the 60s. It was only published in 1973. Okay, we'll take a short break and we'll be back. Stay tuned to Let's Talk. Hi, welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Simon Soon, Hishamuddin Reyes, and Ray Langenbach. We're talking about the Gulag Archipelago Zigzag Project that opened on the 19th of April at the Cultural Center at University of Malaya. It goes on until the end of May. I'll take a short look at this video.
So what is most important here, you have this, what you call the Stockholm syndrome, you know. You began to like your prisoner because you want to be with them. It's okay, they abuse you, they swear at you, they spit on you, they kick you, they strip you naked, it's okay because there's human interaction. But when you are alone in your cell, there's only you and the sound of your breath. And then I created this thing.
Now that was Hisham speaking about the Stockholm syndrome. Hisham, it is an extraordinary moment when you talk about this really ambivalent relationship you're having with the people who incarcerate you, who abuse you in many instances. Did that scar you a lot?
I mean, you mentioned Alexander Solzhenitsyn, One Day Life of Ivan Ivanovich, his books, and that doesn't say as much. I mean, his experience is about time. How does one use the time? Like Simon said, that it was Masuk Air, there's so much time. So what I did is that, yes, I've been called for interrogation for hours and hours, abused and by five or six of them, all of them incognito. I don't know them, they don't know my name. I was blindfolded from room to room. So that's called. So finally, after 2-3 weeks, you tied up to them, you know, you need them to have a conversation, because after that, you go back to your cell all alone. There's nothing there, you know. So that's what happened, you know. So that's why I said, oh my God. So it's nice, you know. But let me tell you.
It's nice meeting them.
Meeting them. Even though they abuse you, even though they do things to you, but it's because you need, I think, as a human person, once need the conversation to make sure that I am still a human being, still sober, still insane, sane. So that is how it goes. So, but there's a fear. At the same time, this Stockholm syndrome, there's a fear. I was very fearful when I hear the clicking of the key, you know. That is really fear. I know that they're coming to take me. I know I'm going to meet those people, going to interact. I know I'm going to have a time with them, but at the same time, I know I'm going to be abused. So that's this kind of thing that's happened to me.
And this is the time that you spent under the Internal Security Act. It was well known because of its preventative powers, right? So you're not actually tried. You're not a common criminal. Yeah. You are mostly political prisoners. There's a huge amount of literature that's been written about that experience. We have everybody from Kasim Ahmad, University Kadua, to Kwak Yat Song, Syed Hussein Ali, Syed Zahari, and because in Singapore there's also been some individuals who have written about their experience under the ISA. This is the Malaysian Gulag, and you're familiar with it, aren't you, Ray? You've been here for decades. Stories about the use of the Internal Security Act against political activists. Mm-hmm. Does that figure at all in terms of the story you want to tell?
Well, certainly it needs the story I want to tell, which is about the American Gulag, needs to be grounded wherever it's told. And that experience is here. That experience is also in Singapore. And the awareness of that, of the particularly the ISA and solitary confinement and what solitary confinement does to a person, whether it's here or whether it's in the United States, that is essentially the same kind of experience. You know, one of the issues of solitary confinement and time is, you know, by limiting space, one expands time. And so that, and that's part of the torture mechanism, is to create, to construct, to choreograph, and to engineer a particular effect in the individual.
Right. I want Simon to ask you about, you know, we mentioned some of the books that have come out. They're mostly memoirs of that time.